If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Tyler Dunn with Bob McGinn, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Packers podcast here. Another week at it, Bob. What do you say?
It's Bear Week, Tyler. And to me, I don't care what anybody says, this is the number one rivalry for the Green Bay Packers. I've always felt that. There's just something different, you know. It's big against small. It's history. It's Hallis. It's Lombardi. It's Lambeau. It just means more. I think it means more to more people than the Vikings or the Lions. Certainly the Lions, but
right.
The Vikings have they've been around for, 50 years, and this thing goes back, pushing 100 now.
It's one of those rivalries that has kind of stayed consistent, stayed true, stayed heated, even when either team might be bad, might be good, and have down decades, up decades. I mean, you've seen this, right?
Yeah, when I got on the beat, you know, the Bears were at their pinnacle with Ditka in the mid-80s, and the Packers were a little bit better than they had been for the previous 15 years under Forrest Gregg, and they fought them tooth and nail. I mean, these games were really close, almost every one. Bears would be 10, 11-point picks, dominant defense, you know, just enough on offense, and Walter Payton when he was still playing, and invariably the Packers were playing pretty close. They were just physical wars. You didn't have all these rules and all this stuff, and it was brutal football. And I mean, those are some of the most they definitely are among. I could name two Bear Packer games that are among the five most memorable I've ever covered. That's a lot of games.
I mean, we could sit here and you could tell stories all day, probably, but one or two that are on your head, on your mind this week.
Well, the Charlie Martin thing, I mean, you know, basically ruining Jim McMahon's career and damaging the Bears' chances to win more than one Super Bowl. Mark Lee getting a penalty for tackling Walter Payton out of bounds, and really Payton pull him over, I think was probably responsible for the fight. Gary Ellerson's fumble at the end of a game at Soldier Field. Sorry, Gary, you're my buddy, but, you know, Mike Singletary had this great hit when the Packers were just about ready to win the game. I mean, it was just physical football beyond belief. Randy Wright suffering, you know, knee injuries, one or two in Bear games from hits from a, you know, violent, unbelievably talented Bear front four. Rich Campbell's might have been his only touchdown pass of his career down at Soldier Field. I mean, these games just go on and on and on. The way Soldier Field used to be set up in the old days, like underground catacombs where you'd park. I mean, the thing sat, you know, 150,000 people, I think, and then they cut it off in about two-thirds when they made it into a football field for the Bears and moved from Wrigley. But there's all kinds of stuff in this rivalry, and to me it's just dwarfs the Minnesota one.
And really, the games were more violent then, right? I mean, there was just a different type of feel to these games.
Absolutely. I can remember Lynn Dickey throwing a pick down at Soldier Field. About five Bears just drilling him into the turf. You know, it just seek and destroy after a quarterback could throw a pick. You know, people talk about the Fridge Perry thing, but that was just a novelty.
Yeah.
I never really got into that. I mean, so they put him in there. I mean, to me, it was just...
So what
appeals to the casual fan, but that really wasn't football.
Well, what fed this hatred? Obviously, it's little old Green Bay, big city Chicago.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of where it starts.
Yeah, I think it is. And they were both really good.
Yeah.
You know, they were both teams were good immediately almost. And so they were, you know, battling on even terms for the end of the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, and then the Packers hit the skids, you know, around late 40s. And so, and then the Bears got good in the early 60s, and they were competing against Lambeau's or Lombardi's teams when the Packers were dominant. But George Halas had come back about, I don't know, three or four times to be head coach, and he battled Lombardi pretty well. Mm-hmm. Lombardi beat him more, certainly more, but, you know, they were competitive. Both teams were down in the late 60s and really much of the 70s. The one shining light was Walter Payton in the series. And then Ditka and his hordes came right in. And
through the 90s, the Bears are terrible.
Early 90s, the Bears weren't that bad in the mid-90s, but certainly, you know, we're losing against the Packers.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's been kind of a dominant trend here. Lovie Smith did real well against the Packers early on, and now he's McCarthy's starting to beat him all the time. So
right, yeah, that was his proclamation, right?
Yes,
the
it
first
was.
Day on the job to beat the Green Bay Packers, and he came out, he did that right away.
He really did.
And I think he's 3-9. I could be shooting from the hip here
right
in
now
in his last 12 against the Packers around there, but he just hasn't really been getting it done.
McCarthy, I know, has won 7 of his last 8. So yeah, right,
boy, and I think the rivalry got a little juiced up this week, Bob.
Yeah, well, you were on site, Tyler, so set the scene for us.
Yeah, so went down to Lake Forest, Halas Hall, Bears camp, and, you know, you have a few ideas for stories. Jay Cutler obviously had a press conference, Brandon Marshall, open locker room, this and that, and Brandon Marshall just stole the show. And you just, you know, it's going to be something a little zany, something a little crazy when Brandon Marshall turns the corner and he's holding this hastily fashioned Christmas tree with one ornament and a little picture of a Super Bowl at the base. And he hit a button. It's playing the Charlie Brown theme song for Charlie Brown Christmas. He sets it on the podium. And first he just goes on and he was making all these metaphors between this awful looking tree and the Bears season. Guys are banged up. The tree's banged up. Yet all the goals are still in front of him. He had the trophy underneath. I don't know. It seemed a little odd, but that only scratched the surface on what was to come, and he just kind of went off on Charles Woodson, on Tremont Williams, on the Packers. He said, quote, "I've had this game marked since we played them last. I heard exactly, what's the corner? Tremont. I heard exactly what he was saying after the game. Woodson, those guys, they do a lot of talking, so this is personal for me. We all know the rivalry. We all know what's at stake." And let's see what he finished up with. "I'm going to play like it's my last game. It's personal. I want to impose my will on this game." I thought it was interesting how he kind of mispronounced Tremont Williams' name. Do you think he knows what how to say Tremont Williams' name?
Maybe not.
Maybe not. You know, maybe he really didn't know.
I don't know. Right.
But it was slight after slight, really. And his issue is that the Packer players would really take any credit for shutting him down in week 2 when he had 2 catches for 24 yards. Green Bay's scheme was really brilliant. I mean, they had Tremont Williams on Marshall with some safety help over the top. They really spent a lot of attention on it. Marshall couldn't do anything. The guy has just been a beast this year, averaging 103 yards a game. You could really label him the best wide receiver in the game right now, probably, if you wanted to. And he did nothing against Green Bay. He's remembered it. He didn't like the fact that Charles Woodson referred to Jay Cutler as, quote, the same old Jay. But I don't remember, maybe you can, Bob, I don't remember too many scathing, you know, pointed comments from Green Bay in the locker room after the game that would really set him off.
Yeah, I read our coverage that the day after, which would have been on a Friday, and I didn't see anything in there at all. Woodson was on the post-game TV thing, I guess, and said it was the same old Cutler. Well, Cutler's played terrible against Green Bay, against Capers. He's got 53.1 passer rating. If Marshall makes that catch on the touchdown, instead of 2 for 24, 0, he's 351-1. He only had 5 targeted balls. You know, when Marshall played for Miami here in 2010, when they upset the Packers, that's 2010, wasn't
right,
it?
Right, yeah. Super Bowl season.
And he caught a bunch of balls. Woodson couldn't handle them. And then they moved, they put Williams over there. And Tremont, he had some problems too, but they were trying to bump and run him. And Tremont's remarks, he learned from that. You can't, in Williams' opinion, you cannot get close to this big man or he's going to trash you. and maybe he'll, maybe the refs won't call everything. You know what I mean? Whatever.
And he took,
so he stayed away this game. And then he referred to that, I don't know, a month or two later in an interview saying what his strategy was. What's the big deal?
Yeah. Well, we'll just kind of continue with a few more comments here. Then we'll get into a little analysis. He said he called Dom Capers, the Packers quote unquote player MVP from that game, and said, quote, for their players to be over there talking about how awesome of a job they are shutting down certain players, you know, I don't respect that when two or three guys are on you or other guys. So Coach Capers did a great job of game planning us and game planning me. I didn't beat double or triple coverage or whatever they were throwing at us. I take it as a slap in the face when guys talk about my lack of ability to do something against them when they have help all over the place. So I'm looking forward to one-on-one coverage. Hopefully those guys in games like this go to their coach and say, let me have him. I want Brandon Marshall. I want to stop Brandon Marshall. Let me have him one-on-one, press coverage. Let's see what happens. I think Brandon's probably going to be a little disappointed. That's not going to happen, right?
No, it's not.
The Packers would be stupid to leave anybody on an elite receiver one-on-one. So the question is, why Brandon Marshall? Why did he spend 23 minutes bashing the Packers? I mean, that's only a little snippet. He also said he won't use the word hate, but he really does not like the Packers, and he does not like their players. Why? I've thought a lot about this, and I'm sure you have too. This can go one of two ways. You know, Green Bay, their players are already really not saying much in response to any of this. We'll talk to them today a little bit more. But you look at the Bears, they've lost four or five. All right, their season's sinking. Their coach is under fire. He's got one more year on his deal. He's already being asked about his contract in the media. If you're Brandon Marshall, what do you have to lose with this team? Yeah, Green Bay might come out. They might smack him in the mouth, and they win. You know, they win by a few touchdowns, and it totally backfires. But I don't think Marshall and the Bears have anything to lose here. He can go up, you know, stand at the podium, say any crazy thing he wants. If it's going to get his team juiced up, and the players, they've said themselves that they like this out of Brandon Marshall. They respond to this on and off the field. You know, from the Bears' perspective, I don't think they have much to lose.
Yeah. I guess just another game to the Packers. You know, they played poorly in the second game. They haven't done anything against since Capers got there. They're 1-7. They are in the thick of the wild card thing, though, Tyler.
They are, but they've lost four or five. They're playing really bad on both sides of the ball. They're not forcing the turnovers in defense like they had. They've got injuries. The one thing they do have is one of the elite receivers in the game, one of the most eccentric players in the modern era. He's going to go off. He's going to get a little crazy. I'm not saying that it's going to work out, but I'm just saying that as far as the Bears are concerned, hey, maybe this is a genius move for Brandon Marshall, as insane as it appears on the surface.
Yeah, it's great stuff, isn't it?
It is. It was entertaining.
Newspapers it filled, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, he would have gone on for 2 hours talking about the Packers. He was cut off by a PR director, a couple more questions, and I think he talked about the game a little bit more. He talked about Charlie Brown and the Christmas tree and that whole thing. It just made zero sense to me. You know, it's my brief exodus, Bob, when I was at USA Today and covered the Bears a little bit. After they beat the Panthers in a very ugly game, 23-22. They had no business winning that game. A couple days after, Brandon Marshall at the podium had a quote-unquote a moment of silence for the game. And he paused. He's just like this. He's just zany. he's brought props to the podium before at past teams, so that wasn't too out there. This is who he is. I think he might be a little out there in left field, but I don't think he's dumb either. I think he realizes the dire straits in Chicago right now and that the season's falling apart, and he decided to do something about it.
Yeah. So if the Bears can run the ball, then Green Bay will have to move a safety in there like they did against the Lions the other day. And that's when Tremont at times was left one-on-one with Calvin Johnson.
That's a very good point.
There's really no way around it. So can the Bears run the ball, and that's when Marshall will get some one-on-one action against Tremont.
If I'm Tremont Williams, I think that might be the part that ticks you off the most. That, or when Brandon Marshall was asked, what ticked you off? Like, what words were said. He said, I don't know. You'll have to Google it. that's a good point you brought up, because a couple of the Bear players mentioned that yesterday as well. They noticed that against the Lions, when they were able to get a ground game going, there were times when there was some one-on-one coverage. And that's what they want, obviously.
Yep.
Another huge key, Alshon Jeffrey. He's back. He had the broken hand, had arthroscopic knee surgery between the two, missed six games, came back against the Vikings last week, caught a touchdown, but he also dropped a big touchdown. Mm. He's probably the key here. I thought that was kind of the undertone in everything in Marshall's press conferences. Look, Marshall's going to get double teamed, but he said, I got a beast on the other side. He called Alshon Jeffrey a future Pro Bowler. Probably a little far at this point, but yeah. He's going to be in some one-on-one coverage on Sam Shields like he was in week two. That's right. A huge matchup.
Right. I think it's also important that Earl Bennett plays. He's had a concussion. He sat out last week, so as we speak right now, we don't know if he's playing. I mean, he'd be a slot and a good possession guy for Cutler, but if Bennett doesn't play, then who are you down to? I mean, then you're down to Eric Weems.
Well, a lot of the
brutal, man.
In Chicago, too, they're kind of...
Devin Hester,
and they're catching flack for not using their tight ends, really. They're not utilizing. They don't really have much talent
at the position.
The
tight end's a disaster. Kellen Davis has had a brutal year, and he won't be... I don't think he'll be there next year. I mean, you know, Hester can't run control routes. They need Earl Bennett on that field, so then the two big guys outside can go vertical and do what they got to do.
All right, now, so... Back to Marshall, I guess I'm kind of basing those thoughts off the fact that the Bears' season is falling apart. Lovie Smith, I mean, he hasn't made the playoffs in four of the last 5 years. He's under the gun. Am I wrong here, Bob? Is Lovie Smith in decent shape? Are the Bears in decent shape? And Brandon Marshall, what in the hell are you doing? Kind of rocking the boat here?
All right, to me, Tyler, when we were all making our picks a week before the season, right, around Labor Day weekend, I never really gave I considered the Bears, but I didn't put them down for even a wild card. I mean, I saw an aging defense. I saw an offensive line that was no better than it was. I just saw them as an 8-9 win team. All right, so their cornerback play, I mean, Tillman's always been good, but, I mean, 9 forced fumbles, the guy has elevated his game. Tim Jennings, the other cornerback, these are crucial positions, he became a Pro Bowl player. I don't even know how this happened. He's 28 or 29. But you could see it that night against Green Bay. The guy was making plays. He was physical, knifing tackles. I mean, so they took the ball away an incredible number of times. They got fantastic cornerback play, and they had a soft schedule, and they're 7-1. I'm thinking they're the biggest surprise team in the league. But I'm sure people in Chicago are thinking, well, this is just the way it should have been, that this 7-1 start was, you know, to be expected. Well, it wasn't. And then the schedule – I was even listening to some talk radio one time in Chicago, and guys were talking about which seed they'd have, which one of the opening round buys, the first or the second. I'm thinking, there's no way this can continue. I mean, their balance of power was just still so not superficial, but weak, I would say. Well, now they've lost 4 out of 5, and their offensive line, all these woes have come back to haunt them. Of course, through 16 games, you can't hide all this stuff. They stopped taking the ball away as much. There's been some injuries to the aging defense. Urlacher's been hurt. And they've lost 4 out of 5. They're still having a good year, by my opinions, from 3 months ago, 8-5, which is backed by scouts. Now, they still have a chance to have a hell of a year. Mm-hmm. They can win 11 games. They can win 10. They get in the playoffs, which I didn't think was possible. But because of the way the season goes, you got a hot start and a slow finish. Then everybody wants to fire the coach. And, you know, I'm not covering Lovie Smith on a daily basis. I can't speak for his full 8 years, 16 games, 9 years, 16 games a season. But based on this year alone, they've had one heck of a year. They're one of the really achieving teams in the league. But that's the way it goes sometimes with timing regarding coaches and teams.
But don't things change, Bob? I mean, things change. You're 7-1. You are who you are. Things are looking good. And they were 7-1. And the offense still wasn't playing to its potential. They have Brandon Marshall, they have Matt Forte, they have Michael Bush, they have all these weapons, and they're still, they didn't really turn the corner. They were still leaving some points on the field. I know the line was pretty bad, but I think that there was still some untapped potential there and all these great players, even when they had a 7-1 record, that's part of the disappointment in just dropping 4 or 5 against good teams, but against teams that I think they should have beat.
Well, had they not taken the ball over, Tyler, based on what I think of their offense,
that's a good point.
They'd be going for a 6-10 season or 7-9.
The turnovers did mask a lot of problems. You're right.
And they got no line. I mean, Karimi's really a bust. Who do you want? Roberto Garza? He's in his 12th year. He's the only guy you really want. I mean, Phil Emery's got to get 7-8 new offensive linemen, really.
You know Phil Emery pretty well. How do you think he went about his first offseason trying to build the Bears?
Well, the move for Marshall is genius. I mean, where would they be without him?
That's true.
Jeffrey, I haven't seen enough to know, you know, how he's going to pan out. Shea McClellan, I haven't personally seen enough to know. I don't know how he's going to pan out. Rodriguez, I think, was a 4th or 5th round pick. I mean, I see him on the tape. He's blocking pretty well. James Brown's a 4th or no, he's undrafted, right? So I don't know. They've had other players who have elevated their game. Steven Paella, the times I've seen him, man, I'm impressed. With Henry Melton, that gives him 2 real studs in the middle, pass rushers. That's hard to find. But it's 1 year. He's had 1 draft, 1 offseason, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know this. The guy structures his job the way Ted Thompson does his in Green Bay. It's a totally different look for the Bears, and so we'll see how he fares.
So your point on Marshall is the team has overachieved in general, is in a good position. So why would you have somebody taking such an extreme tactic here before such a big game?
Well, you know these superstar players, if they take, some of these guys take things really personal. Some of them go public and some don't, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've talked to, even when you talk to the Green Bay cornerback coach, Joe Witt, and you talk to him, others have talked to him about completions given up. Well, you know, he will admit when a guy's in man that he gave it up, but if a guy's in zone, then he says, well, there's extenuating circumstances. Star players, they hate to be judged when they're not in a one-on-one confrontation at any position, you know? And so Marshall's he's a great player, and he's got a lot of pride, and he just went off.
Yeah.
He's been sitting on this for 2 months, 3 months.
And he admitted that he didn't really approach that game the way he should have, and now he's calling this the biggest game of his life. Yeah, I think guys like that, they need to say something like this and have press conferences like this just to get themselves jacked up, too. I mean, that's part of it, too. Yeah, he's calling all their people out, but he's getting himself in a certain mindset. We're going to see what happens here. I mean, this could really backfire. And on Green Bay, they have 4 fines this year. Maybe they'd have a 5th one. But some of those comments, you know that they're going to want to get a hit on Marshall.
Let me mention one more thing on the Bears, okay?
Okay,
they're at 8-5, right? All right, so they're an underdog this week. Let's assume they lose that. All right, then they close at Arizona. They'll be a favorite. And at Detroit, that'll be about a push. Okay, so if they win, they win 2 of their last 3, they're 10-6, and that'll probably get them a wild card. Would you think 10-6?
Yeah,
probably. All right. Just to me, based on what I thought 4 months ago, I just can only go what I think, based on what some scouts told me. I mean, I think that's a really successful season for what they got on paper. All right.
I mean, but look at that sheet: Lance Briggs, Charles Tillman, Tim Jennings, Julius Peppers. I know Brian Urlacher is a little past his prime. They have a lot of talented guys on defense.
They have a lot of talented old guys.
Some old guys, but playmakers. I don't think this is an average team. I think this is a very above average team.
God, I don't. Their line is horrendous. They got no tight end. The quarterback is really, Tyler, he's going to – how can you call a guy a great player when he's going to be putting it up 5 or 6 times up for grabs each week?
It's a good point.
I mean, he's not a great player.
All right, Jay Cutler, where would you rank him in the amongst all quarterbacks in the league?
Would you put him number 3 in the division or number 2 in the division?
3.
You take Stafford?
Yeah, I'd take Matt Stafford.
I think it's too close to call in my – I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'd have to really think that one over. I don't know where Cutler is, 15, 13,
yeah, probably middle of the
12.
Pack, which would be for what they gave up, for what they're paying him.
He's got guts. He'll run. He's a good athlete. He's got a fantastic arm, but he'll – he still does crazy things. Too much for his experience level.
And, boy, the Packers have him figured out. They have Jay Cutler figured out. He – you mentioned the passer rating earlier. It's at 52, 53.1. I want to say 7 touchdowns, 16 interceptions. He's completing about 50% of his passes. Dom Capers has Cutler figured out, and he was brought to Chicago to beat the Packers, and he hasn't done it. He's only beat them once in Chicago. And even that game was a little iffy. I mean, there's some bad calls in Chicago in the 2010 game. Green Bay has his number, and is that really going to change here? I think this is a better secondary for the Packers. They're getting Clay Matthews back. How do you kind of see that whole cat and mouse game going between Dom Capers and Jay Cutler?
I just don't know how well the Bears can do much of anything with an offensive line of Webb, Spencer, Garza, Karimi, and Jonathan Scott. I truly don't. I can't. Can you see him scoring more than 20?
Boy, they're going to have to give Webb help. I mean, that's something they didn't do in week two enough. They're going to have to give him help on Clay Matthews and you don't say max protect, but they're going to have to kind of dumb it down, right? And hope that Marshall gets into some good situations on the outside and hope that Matt Forte and the running game get going. That's probably their best approach on offense.
Are they? Their line is really not even – it's not close to Detroit's. And what Detroit was doing in the beginning of that game was, you know, controlling tempo with the run game.
Now, look, they went against the Vikings a couple times these past few weeks. And in Minnesota, they didn't have much success. A lot of drop passes. But at home, you know, their maligned line that hasn't really been getting the job done this season. I think they gave up one sack, if that, against the Vikings.
One sack.
And they did a good job of getting the ball out quick on adjusting. So That's probably what they're going to try to do here against Green Bay is a quick passing game and to kind of negate Clay Matthews in the pass rush.
They rushed for 113 that day against the Vikings, which is more than fine if they can do that against Green Bay to stay in it. The Bears got to rely on emotion, right? They got to play this
supreme effort. So, right, Brandon Marshall?
Yeah.
He might be a little crazy, but he's not dumb.
He's trying to rally the troops, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know? And it might work.
It could.
I mean, they should be all jacked coming out. They've got to win this game. It's like that, whatever the guy told me, it's do or die, a playoff game for the Bears.
Let's talk Green Bay Packers.
Sure.
What do you say? I guess this is Packers-Bears week. We're 27 minutes into it. It's been all Bears. All right, so Green Bay, this is a different offense than last year, a different offense that we saw earlier in the season. They're going to go ahead here, 3 running backs, a lot of balance, Ryan Grant, Dewan Harris, Alex Green. Do you think that this is the key for them down the stretch, this ground game, using 3 different backs, 3 different skill sets?
Yes, I do, you know. And you can run at this Bears front because they're undersized. You don't have – not that Brian Urlacher – his weakness is to run straight at him. He's better laterally. But the replacements, Roach and then Geno Hayes, I mean, these are small people. So I think Green Bay is going to try to pound between the tackles.
You know what, too? I think the Packers offensive line really loves the direction of things here. I mean, since they've been here, it's been pass first. It's been, keeping Aaron Rodgers upright, up-tempo approach, all of this. A zone blocking scheme when they do run the ball most of the time. They're going downhill now, a lot of angle blocking, right? I mean, and they're getting after teams. As an offensive lineman, I think they love that. I mean, they do have some guys that like to mix it up. TJ Lang, Josh Sitton, even Evan Dietrich Smith, Don Barclay. I mean, he's a gritty guy at tackle, a good run blocker. I think that for how this offense has kind of evolved, it's a good thing for the offensive line, and they have to love this.
I agree. In the first game, Green Bay was 28 for 106 on the run. You know, the Bears, they're small, so they're not obviously Rod Marinelli. His whole scheme is one gap. They're going to be slanting and moving, and you can penetrate and blow up a whole bunch of these kind of plays, you know. If they were just sitting there in a Green Bay classic two-gap scheme, Green Bay could run for 200, but that's not going to happen. You could have some bunch of minus plays, so it's not going to be as easy as Green Bay thinks it might be on the run. It's especially on that field down there, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a bad track.
Right, right. It is. And this is interesting. Corey Wooten, defensive end, asked him in the locker room yesterday, do you have to respect the Packers' ground game now? Have things changed? And he said, absolutely yes, things have changed, that this is a more balanced team, a two-dimensional team that can come at you in different ways. So I think the follow-up to that is, well, you do a lot of cover two and a lot of taking away that big play. Does that change now at all with Green Bay being able to run the ball? DJ Moore, the cornerback, says, well, not exactly, that Aaron Rodgers still has to be prioritized. They want to keep him in the pocket, that quote-unquote all hell breaks loose when he gets outside of the pocket. This is the dilemma the Bears kind of face against Green Bay now. They've done a good job against Rodgers, taking away that big play. Lovie Smith has probably done it as well as any coach against Rodgers, probably, even though they haven't always won. Now Green Bay has a ground game. Very, very interested to see the game plan for the Bears here Sunday.
That's very interesting, the comments made by Corey Wooten yesterday. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Boy, it's going to be fun, Bob. It's going to be fun. Now, what do you say? Now, we talked a lot about the Bears, but any matchups you're looking for specifically in the trenches, out wide, that you're going to be keeping an eye on Sunday? That could be the factor, the deciding factor in this game?
Well, let's look, if Tim Jennings doesn't play, right, and this is a huge question mark. He's got a shoulder injury, right? I think it was a dislocated shoulder. I think so. That's a massive loss for Chicago. Now that means nickelback Kelvin Hayden has to move outside, and DJ Moore then would come in and regain his nickelback job. Those are matchups that Green Bay can definitely exploit. You know, and Tillman's on the other side, and he's a really good player. The safeties are fine. Major Wright and Chris Conne are good players. So, but Wright generally would be the guy coming down in the box. Conte's more the center fielder. On what else? Henry Melton, he's over the right guard, I would say the majority of time, which is Josh Sitton. Mm-hmm. Melton is really fast. He's really quick. This is an extremely good interior pass rusher. So Sitton's got to really be on top of his game, as well as Jeff Saturday. On offense, what do you see in matchups here now, Tyler?
Boy, one thing, though, that I think we got to hit on, too, is the last time these guys played, obviously it was a long time ago. A lot has changed for both teams since then. But the Packers did have success running the ball with Cedric Benson, a guy who they have no longer. I want to ask you, are the Packers better off in the ground game then with Cedric Benson carrying the ball 25 times, getting into a rhythm with his line like he did that day at Lambeau Field? Or now, when you have a short, stocky, strong guy in Dewan Harris, Alex Green, who really has turned a corner, he's starting to feel it a little bit, and Ryan Grant, who's still kind of an unknown, somebody who's been reliable in the past, three different guys kind of coming at you. As far as that matchup goes, the Bears front against three different guys as opposed to one guy in week two. What's better for Green Bay here?
Well, I just like the better player, which is Benson of all these guys.
Okay.
So, I would stick with Benson. I pointed out about a month ago, and I knew it would happen because it always does. Green Bay runs better late in the year. You just have to rely on the run game more. You get in this kind of weather, the bodies just stick together. The game slows down, and you just run better. It's always happened in Green Bay. It's probably happened in Chicago and anywhere else where there's a cold weather city.
So was it kind of fool's gold last year? Late in the season, Aaron Rodgers just torched the Bears. He was bullying Zachary Bowman at Lambeau Field. It was kind of embarrassing how they were moving the ball up and down the field. Same thing the next week with Matt Flynn. Historic record-setting day, and it seemed like, hey, Green Bay, they can throw the ball on anything. It doesn't really matter what the weather is. But it was kind of a little smoke and mirrors. You have to be able to run the ball, be balanced late in the season. Did that catch up with them last year, and are things going to be different this year?
Yeah, they couldn't run against the Giants, could they? They really struggled in that game running.
They got a little out of hand, obviously, and that factors in as well. But
yeah,
they weren't a balanced team. And Mike McCarthy talked a little bit about that last week in their offseason study, that they saw things needed to change. And that they needed to take a little pressure, a little heat off the defense and run the ball better. They've had a lot of injuries at the position all season long. And we're talking Benson, Brandon Saint, James Starks. But now they're running the ball a little better. Probably a good thing for them.
Yeah. I see Green Bay's running game, if they give it a chance, could have a big day against Chicago. I really do. If they get that initial penetration and the one gapping blocked, if they're able to, the offensive linemen are will not whiff, I think they can just move those linebackers out of there and get to 150, and then they win.
As we're taping this right now, it was up in the air. You have to think TJ Lang moves back to guard where he's comfortable, right? And then you have a good run blocker and Lang at guard, a good run blocker and Barkley at tackle. They're comfortable there. I don't know. I mean, this is something you wrote about a long time ago.
Yeah, I just don't know about Lang's ankle. And Dietrich Smith's coming off his best game. Mm-hmm. He was impressive against Minnesota.
He was. He had a good game.
He played. Yep, he finished. Game. He looked to finish. He had a couple bad plays against Farrelly in the pass game when he got walked back twice. But he played pretty good. I'm not so sure they want to move Dietrich Smith out this week until maybe perhaps next week. I don't know. But I kind of think Dietrich Smith will be the left guard this week and Barkley the right tackle.
Boy, he kind of became the resident whipping boy for fans too, didn't he? Evan Dietrich Smith. Yeah, he had his rough moments, but a pretty good game against Detroit.
Yeah, he finished. You know, the guy, I give him a lot of credit. Was the best game he played.
Yeah.
Best I've ever seen him.
He had the key block on Harris's 14-yard touchdown, pulling.
Nice pull.
All right, Bob. So any final thoughts here? We still got a lot to talk about this week, and we're going to get to it at JS Online. But here on the podcast, what's on your mind? What else?
I think we've covered most of the aspects of this matchup. I mean, it's a real game. Next week, we got Tennessee to talk about, and that's not a real game. So on this one, you concentrate on the game.
All right. Fair enough. Okay. It's time for that part of the show, Bob.
All right. I'll just mention it. All right. Maybe somebody wants the Ultimate Super Bowl book, Tyler. We're still pushing this for Christmas. All right. And Pat and I, we can turn it around in a hurry. Send me an email, bmcginn@jrn.com, B-M-C-G-I-N-N. Do it quick. We will turn that around as quick as we can and get it to you for your holiday gift giving.
Give me one anecdote from that book. Sell it, Bob. Bob Vila.
Sell it. Give me a game real quick. I can't
think. Okay, let's think here. How about this past one? Patriots-Giants. One of the better games. You talked to Bill O'Brien, right?
All right, I'll just give you one real quick.
Okay.
Although this one's going to take a little bit of time, but I'll give it to you anyway, all right? Let's go to the Green Bay-Pittsburgh game.
Okay. That might be a good game for a selling point, right? I imagine a lot of Packer people are listening.
This did not make the book, so it's a teaser.
Ooh.
But I think it's interesting.
This is what you call a teaser in the business.
So the one Pittsburgh knew, Bruce Arians, the coordinator, told me this, and it was pretty obvious, that their big chance to strike was to get Mike Wallace matched up against Charlie Peppra. All right, because Charlie couldn't run, and Wallace is as fast as anybody in the league. So on third and one, they got that opportunity, and the Packers were in their jumbo 4-4. Wallace was the only wideout split wide right. Tremont was over there, and Tremont was just playing a zone in that situation. He's got run responsibility, and then when Wallace ran a post, he turned him over to Charlie Peppra. Now, the Steelers had run this play early in the year, and they had practiced it a few times at their facility in Dallas, which was at TCU. But however, the TCU indoor facility was shorter. It was about 70 to 80 yards, okay? And when they practiced this thing twice down there, Roethlisberger threw the ball, but because of the wall behind the end zone, Wallace had to flatten out that route, and he flattened it.
Are you
rather
serious?
Than running at a point towards, I'm not saying at the goalpost, but more towards the middle of the end zone. So, on game day, Wallace ran it the way they had used it and practiced it all season long, that he ran it more on a 45-degree angle rather than the flattening. So, he was running to a point maybe 15 yards from the back pylon towards the inside of the field on that angle.
Yeah.
However, at TCU, because of that wall and the cramped space, they had flattened the route. So, Roethlisberger threw it towards the post.
He threw it
properly, and Wallace flattened that route the way he had done it at practice at TCU. The ball was thrown horribly wayward, incomplete. Peppra was beaten, you know, like a drum. I mean, that's becomes a punt when it would have been a touchdown had that practice facility, at least according to the Steelers.
That's remarkable.
Yeah,
that is unbelievable.
There wasn't
so
space in that book.
Facility. screwed him up. I mean,
I think it's an incredible thing. I really do. And I kind of believe it. When you watch that tape, that's what Wallace did. And that's where Ben threw the ball. Two different ships on different courses.
Unbelievable. I mean, here's Super Bowl week is, and you know, there's so much craziness, zaniness left and right all week. And probably that wasn't even mentioned. I mean, that was a deciding factor in the game. The practice facility, TCU.
I mean, I'm not saying it was the deciding factor, but I think it certainly could have been a touchdown right there, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's one nugget, and that book is just full of them. It is fascinating. I know I'm a little biased here, but great book. I hope everybody buys one. I'll buy a few for Dad, Austin, Clint, and the gang back home.
Thanks, Tyler.
Alrighty, guys. Thanks a lot for listening, and be sure to check in to JS Online and the Packers blog for updates all week leading up to the game. It's going to be a good one, Bob. Really looking forward to it.
Thank you, everyone.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.